to be astonished.
It's that time again.
Let's get started.
From the Clatsop County Historical Society, an adventure in history with Matt Burns and Alana Quila.
You should never be allowed to talk to people.
Some people without brains do an awful lot of talking.
And now, with today's adventure, it's Mac and Alana.
Good evening, and welcome to An Adventure in History. I'm Alana Quila with Providence Seaside Hospital, here this evening with Mac Burns, Executive Director of the Clatsop County Historical Society. And tonight we have a very interesting guest.
I think you've used that before.
Have I?
Yes.
Well, there are so many adjectives to use.
I'm going to get you a thesaurus.
Interesting, nice, involved, community, and I don't know. I can't think of all the words.
Well-rounded. I think that's what we're going to be tonight.
Yeah.
Well, I thought you might go weird, strange, and where'd that come from?
Oh, we like that too. You're already fitting in perfectly here.
Yeah.
So do we have anything to plug? Should we get right to the big show here?
Let's get right to it.
Okay, so these are the history highlights, and I don't have that many. It's okay. On half a page today.
Ooh.
So we can go through these fast because I think we're going to have a lot of area to cover here with our guests. So these are things that happen tomorrow, November 8th. So these are things that you can be smart and icebreakers and all kinds of other good things. And as always, if any of these are the answer to Final Jeopardy and you win on Final Jeopardy, you do owe us half the money.
Oh, yes.
Okay. 1731, Benjamin Franklin opens the first library in North America, in the North American colonies in Philadelphia.
I love that.
So do I.
I would be curious as to know what books he
chose. With Ben Franklin, that could be questionable.
Yeah.
One of my favorite quotes about Ben Franklin, it was when we had the curator, Chelsea Vaughn, on, and I did a This Day in History with Benjamin Franklin, and I said, who doesn't like Benjamin Franklin? And she kind of laughed, and under her breath, she said, well, perhaps his wife. And it really made me laugh, just because, yeah,
Ben Franklin. Did he have a wife?
He did, but I don't know that he knew it all the time. I think he knew it occasionally that he had a wife and he should go home.
Go Chelsea.
Yeah, it was pretty funny. I still laugh about that. 1887, because you know I love the Wild West stuff. Doc Holliday dies of tuberculosis.
Yep.
Yeah.
There was a vaccine for that.
Only, instead of just go to the mountains.
Right.
So they told him, just go to Colorado. 1910, first Washington state election in which women could vote.
Oh.
Way to go.
Yes, finally. What year, though?
1910.
Yeah.
So I always wonder, just what were you so afraid of?
No.
So the women can vote. Who's afraid of that? All right, 1932, FDR is elected president. 1960, John F. Kennedy is elected president. There are actually a whole bunch, so I stopped writing them down.
I knew you'd have all of those.
But my history highlight of the day, the thing I think had the most impact on history, things that happened on this date, 1895, the German physicist Wilhelm Conrad Röntgen, I'm probably mispronouncing that, becomes the first person to observe X-rays.
Oh.
And all the good uses that come out of x-rays.
Yeah.
But what disappoints me is there wasn't a laboratory accident that turned him into either a superhero or a supervillain as he discovered x-rays.
Right.
But 1895, yeah. Way to go, Wilhelm.
That's awesome. Just good. Just a couple ones. Small ones.
What did I miss?
1966, Republican Edward Brooke of Massachusetts becomes the first African-American elected to the Senate in 85 years.
Wow.
1966. And then in 1983, Wilson B. Good is elected as the first black mayor of the city of Philadelphia. 1983.
We started with Philadelphia, and now we end with Philadelphia.
Yeah. And then one kind of big one, 2000, the dispute begins over the U.S. presidential election between George W. Bush and Al Gore. Supreme Court ruling on December 12th results in a 271-266 electoral victory for Bush.
So my favorite memory of that was I was running the Pony Express Museum at the time, and whenever I'd give tours, I would talk about the speed of communication in 1860 and why the Pony Express was necessary. And there was a map that showed that mail and other things could travel around South America, and that would take about 6 months, or it could go down to what became the Panama Canal and be carried overland across the isthmus, and then put on another ship and taken to California, and that would take about 3 months, or it could be by stagecoach from what was really the edge of the United States, the kind of the Missouri River, St. Joe, Missouri, across the vast western territories to California, and that would take about 3 weeks, or all of a sudden the Pony Express could do it in 10 days. And I said, could you imagine having to wait, like, to learn who won the presidential election for 3 weeks? And everybody would laugh as we were in, you know,
right,
week number five, week number six, week number seven. So I had this fine, like, period of, like, 3 or 4 weeks where it was just perfect to tell that story.
Yeah.
Because one of the first things the Pony Express carried was the news that Abraham Lincoln had been elected. So it was always kind of funny.
Yeah.
And the Pony Express, I think, was only in business 3 years, weren't they, before rail put them under?
Very close, 18 months.
18 months. Oh.
Yep. And then the Telegraph put them out of business officially, and then the railroad finished shortly after that. But most people think, because they've heard of it, it must be this wonderful 10-year successful business, and it was a financial failure.
Mm-hmm. But a marketing genius.
It is a marketing genius that we all have heard of it.
Don't underestimate those people in marketing.
Really, because of Buffalo Bill Cody.
Yeah,
because he briefly worked for the Pony Express, and part of his Wild West show, he kind of celebrated, and that's the only reason people have really heard of it.
Well, that works.
But it did allow me to begin my museum career.
Yes, which we're very grateful for. That brought you here.
All right.
Did your career last 18 months also?
At one museum I ran, it did.
There you
About
go.
That long.
So in case you haven't recognized that voice yet, this is we are glad to have Rick Newton, City Commissioner from the City of Warrenton, here with us tonight to talk about your life and why you're here and what kept you here. So welcome. Thank you for being with us.
Well, thank you for having me. It's quite an honor. Yeah. Why I'm here?
Yeah.
Well, my roots go pretty deep.
Yeah.
It's so hard to explain. When I came out of high school, I had a U.S. Bank. I applied for a U.S. Bank scholarship, which was a great deal because it was a full ride. And the guy's face about fell off when I turned it down because I knew I wanted to work for me, because I'd always, at fish cleaning at the docks and other stuff, I'd always work for me. And I have to tell you, I went to Clatsop College, and I learned so much at Clatsop. And then I went to Portland State, and I didn't learn a thing there, to be honest. I hated it, because they wanted to train you to be for Nike, work for Nike and the big guys, and I was going to work for me. Originally, I thought I was going to design fly fishing poles, because they are a mathematical equation in engineering, actually. But then, while I was going to Portland State, my dad called and asked if I wanted to run a store. And I go, man, I don't know, because I was transferring to Oregon State because it was better, I thought, in a business education in the area I wanted. I'll call you back in a week. I got to make up my mind. So I called back, and my dad and I had my dad, Les Newton, and I had a very good agreement, because fathers and sons always fight, you know. I said, either keep your mouth shut or fire my body. And, you know, that worked really well. The only time he ever got on me when he got done, I said, the only reason you're chewing on me is because you're mad at Mike. And my dad goes, yeah, but I can't get a hold of him.
Oh.
But, you know, so many father and sons fight continually over business. He let me run the business. And I got to tell you, it was scary at first.
And what was this business, in case folks don't know?
The Knapp Auto Parts store in Warrenton.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so it opened when?
1977.
Okay.
One of the reps came through, and I wish he had kept his mouth shut, but he goes, did you know you're the youngest store owner in the United States? I go, do you know how much pressure that puts on you when you don't know what you're doing and you're figuring it out? It was just heaps. So when I started, I didn't sleep a lot.
Oh, wow.
It was like jumping in a pool and go, man, I hope I can learn to swim. But it worked out well. I had the store 39 three-quarter years. In that time, a lot of Warrenton changed. But really, I thought what you'd be asking me about is how much Warrenton changed in my lifetime.
That's true. Yeah.
I'm sure you know who Garrison Keillor is in Lake Wobegon, where that's the same town as I grew up in, basically. Warrenton was like that, where a stranger would stop a kid and tell them to wipe their nose, you know. That's that's what Garrison said, and it was like that in Warrenton. You felt safe. We had wood sidewalks back then, and there are people were very good, and everybody was honest for the most part back then, you know. Many deals were made with a handshake, and your handshake was a bind, and I missed that immensely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But let's see.
So what was it like just going to school? I mean, how big was the school? Because, I mean, it's still small. It's still a small town. Mm-hmm. But what was that school experience like for you? Who were some of the people that you remember?
Well, in first grade, in there, Robbie Law, Dr. Law, and I were kind of competitors on grades. He did better than I did, to be honest. And that was interesting. He was always a very nice kid, very nice. I still see about six people in the area that I started first grade with. One of those is Dwayne Mullins, who's been very successful at Medics, and he's a great kid. I've
Great kid.
Great kid. Well, he's a great person.
He is. We
spent a lot of time together when we were real young. Just a whole bunch of people I knew. The things I miss about Warrenton is try to keep if we can is that small town charm. I don't know how else to describe it because the strangers were nice to you, the people were nice to you. You know, nobody yelled at anybody. You know, everybody helped everybody else. Nobody had to ask for help. One thing that reminds me of that was one a lady. Didn't have any money, but she needed firewood. So Jake Bosshart, who was a longtime Warrenton person, she got up in the morning and here was a full truckload of firewood in her yard. He'd been there during the night and delivered. And he just gave it to her. That's how Warrenton was back then.
So talk about a little bit, what types of things, when I hear small town feel, I always for some reason picture Opie and Pa going fishing. And since you referenced fishing poles, was that an activity? What kinds of things did you do with your friends as a young kid? I mean, where'd you ride your bike to? Or what fun things did you do? What kind of trouble did you get into?
Well, I am a sport fisherman, clear to the bone. Patty, my very significant other, teases me that if we moved to Kodiak, I would die. And she's right, because I don't quit. Once I go fishing, I don't quit. But we did a lot of fishing. My dad liked to fish. He liked to hunt. We did a lot of hunting. Maybe on my dad's side, the Newton family came to Oregon in 1853,
wow.
And they settled down by on Brush Creek, down out of Sweet Home, which is out of Lebanon, which is out of Albany, you know, out that way. And the homestead has no electricity to it still, I believe. But anyway, I'm very lucky. I have the shotgun they brought on that wagon train to Oregon. I had it restored. I don't know how many great greats back that would be, but anyway, the Newton that brought that wagon. That train out here was the wagon master, and he was 17 years old. It was his third trip at 17.
Wow.
So they were tough guys back then. And so, to be honest, we'll go over to my dad. One person asked how my dad learned aviation mechanics because he was Admiral Kaufman's flight mechanic in World War II. And we'll deviate a little here. I was very brilliant for 1 second. I brought the globe out while my dad was sitting there in his last couple years of life. I said, show me where you were in World War II. So he marched us from Australia clear to where they signed in Japan. And he started laughing. He goes, you know, the prettiest place we saw ever was French Polynesia. Do you know what it's called now? I thought. And he says, Vietnam. And I'm sorry, having been watched TV in the 60s, I don't picture Vietnam as being very pretty. But anyway, my father coming from a farm, they asked how he learned aviation mechanics. A farm boy can fix anything with nothing. And my father passed some of that on to me, luckily. But he could. It's just amazing the things my father could do. Yeah. And my mother was so artistically talented, it's amazing. She could read a book and figure out how to do that. And what's funny, on fishing, my mom liked the flies that were tied. So she taught herself how to tie flies just because she thought they were pretty. And that's who I learned how to tie flies from when I was 7 or 8, probably.
But
I did lots of hunting, lots of fishing.
Okay.
One time my dad took me across the street, directly across from my driveway is a back way into the cemetery. And I wanted to go fishing. Finally he goes, okay, let's go. You know, so we go over there and we're there, I don't know, 20, 30 minutes. He says, okay, let's go home. Because I was playing with the fish in the water. And he says, reel that in. I said, I can't. And some expletives later, he said, reel it in. I said, I can't. Well, it turned out to be a 5-pound bass that we caught. And Les was so proud that we caught that bass that time, but it swallowed the fish I was playing with in the water. But he was yelling at me because I was playing with the fish. But that was a very special time for us. But we walked through there to go to the cemetery and fish lots of times. The kids did, you know. The docks, when my dad worked on boats down at the docks, which was continually, if I went with him, I took a fishing pole and I'd fish for suckers, of course, down there, you know. One thing that's in the early Warrenton, like Ellie Hendrickson had Hendrickson's Moorage there, which was when Warrenton was the sport fishing capital of Oregon. And when you went to buy a gallon of paint in the winter at Ellie's, it took an hour because you had to walk in and it had that smell like England Marine used to have, you know, the wood stuff. I miss that smell so much. And you walked in and you had to have a soda pop and a coffee or whatever and sit down, talk. And then finally you get your paint, had to discuss everything's going on. And that's when you talk about what that is, that's what I miss is that slowness.
Yeah.
Because everybody liked everybody and got along, you know. It was very interesting. But I miss Hendrickson's a lot. I cleaned fish there for, I don't know, several summers as my brother did. And it was good money. And like in 1968, I made over $3,000 in the summer, which in 68, a probably cannery worker made maybe eight altogether.
That's a good paying summer job now.
Wow.
At 25 cents a fish. The most I ever did in the day was a little over $100.
Oh, my goodness.
But that's a lot of fish.
That's a lot.
You
know?
And what did you, as a kid, what did you spend money on that you when you were earning this kind of money? Were you saving it? Or
a five-speed Stingray bicycle. That was top of the line, you know. Just anything I want. I had enough money to buy whatever I wanted that way, which was good. And so that money from there bought my first car, which was a 66 Mustang.
And where did you buy your car? Do you remember?
Well, because my dad's being in the automotive field, and he bought some things from the car dealer, the Ford dealer in Klaskanai. The Klaskanai dealer called him, this lady traded in this Mustang. She's had it serviced every 2,500 miles. Da, 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 da. You want to come look? Of course, when I went and looked, 66 Mustang was like 45,000 miles. And I thought, yeah, I want that. So, and Les bought my first tank of gas, and it was just about $5.
Wow. So you mentioned before we started recording that you call your dad Les for a reason.
Yes. My father... First off, he had a blood clot in his right ear. He woke up one morning totally deaf in the right ear. His left ear would be near the car window. And as I don't know what it was, but you could call him Dad and he wouldn't hear you. But if you called him Les, maybe because that's what most people did, it would get his attention. So we always just referred to him as Les. So it's not disrespectful. It's just a way to get his attention. But with that, it was kind of interesting because I didn't realize my father had a photographic memory. And I did, too, but I didn't learn about it till after I got out of college. I wish I'd learned about that sooner, where you open your eyes a certain way, you take a picture and read it later. And so my dad would work on, like, a Northwest Natural Gas truck, and the vehicle number that they use is about 12 digits or something, and he'd look at that, and then he'd work on it, whatever, and at night he'd sit up at home and write out the bills, and he could write all that stuff down there. The only way you can do that is if you took a picture, I'm sure. But he, you know, back then, nobody, you didn't call it that. Nobody. Yeah. Just a good memory is all I thought. I didn't realize that. And once I figured out that I could take the pictures, it was fun to mess with my crew about what it said on page whatever, you know, because I could recite what it said down to the word because I could read it. But that's gone now for the most part. My father was a huge influence on me, huge influence. As you know, I give a lot of time to Warrington. I guess maybe we should go here for a second. Anyway, my father gave a lot of his time to Warrington. He was 27 years on city council, 17 as mayor. And I have to remember one time he came in the store and he couldn't believe it. They put a drain pipe across the street in a ditch to a culvert, and they put gravel out. So the neighbor across the street wanted to know when he could get his free gravel. And he didn't have a ditch. He just wanted free gravel for his driveway.
Sure.
And that's the kind of things the mayor's get calls for. I just had to laugh about that.
Was that, that could be yesterday.
Yeah. What prompted him to want to get involved in city council and city government?
Well, since he's passed, I can tell you what it was. He hated the attorney the city had.
Oh.
The attorney the city had had insulted him. When he would read, instead of saying et cetera, he'd go ect. And he talked down to the commissioners at times. So my dad really got on there to get that guy fired and then stayed for 26 more years after that. Since he's gone, we can say that now.
Yeah.
You know?
I was going to ask, did it take 26 years to fire the lawyer?
But it did not. Took about one.
Oh, there you go.
So what prompted you to want to get involved? Yeah. Was it watching your dad's example, or was it something specific like you wanted your gravel?
Yeah. No. Trust me. When the city paved the store, the street behind my store, I caught all kinds of crap. Because, your new city commissioner, you get the street. It takes 5 years to pave a street, at least. You know. But, of course, I got blamed for that. But, no. I believe, or I feel, that my family, all my family, and I owe Warrington for everything we have. And so I'm trying to repay my debt to Warrington. I've done a lot of things to do that. And Patty goes, how do you know when you've paid enough? I said, you don't. She says, well, I wish you'd drawn a line. So anyway, that helped form in my book because my ex-wife was mentally ill. Eventually, you get drugged down the hole so much, you have to figure out what you are because you're losing it too. And so in my book, I have five lines that describe me. And if you want to know how I work, you look at those lines. The first one is you have to make a difference before you die. People go, that's not very gentle. No, it's true. You should make a difference before you die or you've wasted your time here. And so I live that every day trying to make a difference. That's why I work for Warrington. And they have given me every single thing I have. The people of Warrington have given me that. So.
Yeah,
and I appreciate it. Everybody should appreciate what they've been given. as I told you there, I miss the characters in Warrington immensely. Slick Hartley, nobody until he passed away, nobody knew he had a Bronze Star. I assume they didn't give those out for free in World War II with cereal boxes. Nobody knew because they didn't talk about their war experiences, you know.
Yes.
Dale Bodie, what a character. He knew who my ex-wife was when we were married. And she pulled in to get some gas. She came back to the store. She goes, I don't know who that guy is, but I'm going to run over him if I get a chance. Because he played it since she didn't know who he was, but he knew who she was.
And, you know, I'm related to Del Bodie.
Oh, you are?
He's a cousin of my mom.
Oh, I'll be darned.
Honest Del Bodie. Yeah.
Honest Del Bodie.
Honest
Del Bodie.
He sold cars.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes, yeah. He did. And he was mayor, too.
Was he?
I thought, well, maybe I'm getting my history wrong, but he was on the city council.
Oh, I don't know. Clarence Kelson, Mark.
Nice, yeah.
Mark would remember Clarence because he'd walk up to you. He was an old, tall, thin guy, and he had to thump you with his cane if you were a kid. That was the one thing he did. He came in my father's repair shop, Warrington Auto Marine, with a driver's license. It was the first year they had him in Oregon. He was so proud that he'd gotten a driver's license. I think it was 1925, maybe, when they had to get a first one. He was a character. Couldn't hear, couldn't talk much, but he was a character. Jiggs Johnson, you know, you take your hand and it saws back and forth for half an hour when you shook hands with Jiggs. He always treated people very well, though. He was a character, absolutely.
What did he do?
He had the pharmacy. He had the pharmacy in Sweet Home. When my father left Sweet Home to go in the service, because my dad lied to get into the service. He was only 17 when he went in, but during the war, everybody went, you know. But when he got out, he stayed with Aunt Irma, who was my dad's sister, and Jim Shrout in Seaside, and he, where the little corner store was in grocery store in Gearhart, that was a restaurant, and my dad was a line cook there for them at that time. So my dad had done a lot of things.
Wow.
And when he got to Warrington, here was Jiggs Johnson, owned the pharmacy in Warrington, and he knew him from back in, in Sweet Home.
That's crazy.
It is where you run into people.
Yeah.
The last person, when I think about characters, I think one of our last characters passed away, which was Gordon Wallman, that died about 2 years ago, probably. But I had to laugh. I hope I don't think you have to edit this, but he'd give you a business card and it said Fiddle Fart Construction because he loved to tinker with everything. But he was such a nice guy, you know, had stories. He grew up in Seaside by where the tracks used to be. Gordon did. And, you know, it's a shame that we don't have more of those people anymore because they were amazing people. The things I remember about old Warrington is the grocery store that was about where the tavern is now on Main Street there. It was Skinner's. He was a Dunn, which was from Birch Street, Missouri, which about half the people in Warrington are from Birch Street, Missouri. Anyway, the thing I remember that's so interesting, he had one of those wooden screen doors with a spring on it. So I remember the slap of the screen door when you went in, that clack is what registered. And then next to that was Mr. and Mrs. Stuckgrass dime store. And, of course, as a kid, we spent lots of time in there because you could buy BBs for like 5 cents there or whatever, you know, and caps to smash with a hammer, you know. Why put them in a gun? You can get a lot bigger bang if you smash them with a hammer, right?
Yes. But, you can do the whole roll with a hammer.
Yeah.
Gosh, do kids even know what caps are anymore?
I have no idea. But Stuckgrass always treated me, our family, very well. A lot of people treated our family very well. Mm-hmm. As new people to the area. Mrs. Stuckrath, I got to pay her back because she locked herself out of her house, so I got to climb in her one of her windows to unlock the door for her. So I got to pay her back a little bit.
Perfect.
At Jenny's Cafe. Jenny's Cafe was a landmark in Warrington. I believe Lauren Grampson's wife, Linda, worked at Jenny's, but that's many years back. But that was the space, almost like Arnie's is now pretty much, where everybody goes to have coffee. Well, my dad, of course, being a practical joker all the time, he took a torch and cut a spoon off halfway down the bowl. So they bring him coffee, and he starts stirring. He picks out. He goes, oh, my God, look what this did to this spoon. This coffee is so strong, it ate half the spoon, you know.
Oh, my gosh. And their eyes got big.
Oh, yeah. But that's how the old-time town was. You know, everybody got along with everybody for the most part. Mm-hmm. I was trying to think. The library next to it was City Hall, which was about, you know, everything seemed bigger when you're kids, but I'll bet City Hall wasn't 20 feet wide there and narrow. And then in the same building next to it was another, like, 20-foot wide shot, which was the library. And Judge Baldwin, the people of Warrington should know about Judge Baldwin. He's the only city manager probably in history that turned down a raise. The city offered him a raise on what he made. He said, no, I have enough money. I don't need it. That doesn't happen.
No. You know?
But yeah, he turned down a race from the city commission. Judge Baldwin did.
Wow.
As city manager and the judge. Yeah. Because back then, the city manager was the judge, was the that. Another one, when I think of the city, I hope I'm not rattling too much here. Earl Sarters was the maintenance guy for the city. All one of them back then, you know. Wow. When it's a small town thing. My folks' house burned. It was over on, before I was born, over on Alder Street, which is a little ways. My dad ran to the station and got the fire truck, was back fighting fire by the time the firemen showed up, you know. They saved the foundation was about it on that house.
Wow.
But
talk a little bit about, I'm as a relative newcomer, mm-hmm. less than 20 years. I'm struck at, you know, to me, the center of gravity is sort of everywhere. We don't think anything in the story of driving over to Warrenton. Was it back then, was Warrenton the center of the universe and a story was kind of a trip that she had to plan and think about, or Seaside or Cannon Beach was something you'd only do on the weekend or something like
yes,
that?
Yes, the bridge did not go across the bay. Oh, so you drove right. all the way around. And, of course, the kids go, I don't want to go to that story. It's so far to get there because it was about a 20, 30-minute drive, you know, in the old days. Astoria was totally different from Warrenton. We were very separate. All the people, Astoria had stores. Warrenton didn't have a lot of stores, but we had some downtown. Hammond had stores back then, but it was very working class over here. And I kind of believe there may have been some rivalry between the two towns back then. Mm-hmm.
Shocking.
Yeah, shocking.
Well,
see, I look at it through the eyes of the Clatsop County Historical Society. We are in the tourist business. Mm-hmm. We're in the education business, but we're also in the tourist business. And I don't believe anybody comes to just Cannon Beach.
Right.
They come to the entire Clatsop County. They come across the river. And that's one of the things I think that sometimes we fail to understand. We are all in the same boat here.
We are.
Nobody just goes to Fort Stevens and doesn't do anything but stay in Fort Stevens and they go home. They come and they go up and down all of these towns.
Yeah. So. Well, back then, I would believe more tourists came to Warrenton than came to Astoria because we were the sport fishing capital of Oregon. Mm-hmm. And Bud Charlton, who's passed away for a while, he worked hard. He would haul 3 trips a day if he could out of there. And they got a whopping $12.50 per passenger back then.
Oh.
But he would haul 3 trips because I'd have to wait to clean fish till he got back at 7 o'clock or whatever for him. But they worked hard. That's the other thing, too. Those, you know, people now work hard. Back then, those people had lived through the Depression, had nothing, you know, and so they worked really hard. When I think of Sweet Home, my dad had me tour and go down there, and the only building he acknowledged in Sweet Home when we went through there as we went back to the homestead to talk to his brother was, he goes, there's the bank that stole my dad's money. So didn't say one thing about anything else in there. So that tells you where their thoughts go
right.
to me. I found that very interesting.
Yeah.
Well, on a final note about Warrenton, because we do love Warrenton, we're a little biased. What do you want your legacy to be in when people think of you and the city of Warrenton?
That I help to try to make things more livable.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, one of my legacies might be those 2 stainless cutouts in front of the library, because that was one of my projects there. I spruce up Warrenton, and I put my commissioner pay into that one there, because I don't keep my vast...
I was going to say, really, really big share.
6809 after taxes every 2 weeks. I put that in the slush fund I spend back in the community.
Well, that is wonderful. Well, thank you so much, Rick. And thank you for your service.
We are going to have to invite you back because I feel like we just scratched the surface.
Well, yes. It's an honor. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks for listening. Go make some history. And we will catch you next week.
Thank you for joining us for an adventure in history. An Adventure in History is created and produced by the Clatsop County Historical Society and brought to you by KMUN.